produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Joseph Cottrell and Ken Fuller. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 605. 90124 versus 90125.
Hi, this is Tony Kaye, and you're listening to the Yes Podcast.
Welcome to episode 605 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host, Mark Anthony Kaye, will be along in a few moments. You can always get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. There's been no time to go through the socials this week, but it's important to mention John Dee's post of the newly discovered film of Yes in 1971, miming to Yours is No Disgrace. It turns out that it was a pilot episode of an independently produced pop TV show called Take One Plus One. The other artist featured was Stephen Stills, although not in this footage. Apparently there was interest from Australia in showing the TV programme, but it's not clear whether it was ever aired over there or not. What is certain, though, is that the film shows the band in an absolutely fascinating way, and it's remarkable it has remained undiscovered for so many decades. There is new hope for more discoveries, perhaps. Never give up believing. This week marks the 40th, is it the 40th, yes, anniversary of 90125, but we're going to take a bit of a slightly different angle on this and talk a bit about 90124, and Mark is with me now. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Kevin. How are you doing today?
I'm not doing bad at all. What about you?
Not too bad. Still having some interesting computer issues, but seem to be battling through it and doing relatively okay, so I'm in a good mood for some reason.
Well, that's good. It's because you get to talk about Yes again.
Yes, of course. That's probably the reason.
Yes. Okay, then. So we're going to talk about 90124, which I've covered on the podcast years and years ago, and it's high time we had a think about it again, because it shows us the way that some of the songs on 90125 were put together by Trevor Rabin, and actually some of the other songs from Big Generator, Union and Talk as well. It's surprising in a way that this album even exists as a as the concept, 90124. And I'm holding here the copy of it, the CD copy of it, which our very kind friend Ken Fuller sent to me quite some time ago, because these are quite difficult to get hold of, these albums. But I was surprised to read that it was released in 2003, just in the UK, by a company called Voiceprint, who are a fairly well-known label. And then it was re-released in 2020 in Japan and in Europe as a newly remastered version. And even this year, there's been a vinyl version just released.
Really?
Yeah, just released in the UK, which seems a very, very niche and bizarre thing to release. And looking at the original 2003 version, though, and I've also got my original 2003 copy of 90125 here, and clearly what they've done is they've tried to make it look as close as possible to 90125 as they possibly could, but actually with much more up-to-date computer graphics. And one of the things that I quite like, because I'm, you know, I grew up in this era and it was one of the first two Yes albums that I heard, I quite like the visual identity of 90125. It's quite quirky and quite 80s in feel, with the silver background and the strange Y shape in the middle with those three colours. Is it a graphic style that you like, Mark?
I mean, I never really minded the 90125 sort of artwork in general. I mean, it's very sparse and very, you know, I guess the term is clean looking art. Yeah. Right. And this kind of just, you know, follows suit. It's just, you know, instead of gray, we have a sort of brown color going on here now.
Yes.
And, you know, but it never bought. I mean, let's put it this way. That sort of circular logo that adorns both 90125 and 90124 makes it very easy to identify. Like, you know, if you're looking in through, you know, like a, a stack of CDs and you're trying to find that 90124 thing, the easiest way to figure it out is just to look for that logo.
Yes.
You know, as soon as you see that, then chances are you've stumbled onto it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So yes, fascinating that on the, as was the trend at the time in 1983, there is a little blurb on the sleeve notes about exactly how the artwork was produced. And it says, original album art in this version, sleeve produced by Gary Mowat, is that how you pronounce it? And assorted images. Cover image produced on Robograph 1000 system, which sounds very antiquated now, doesn't it? Utilizing Apple IIe 64K RAM microcomputer and BitStick controller, plotted same size on HP 75808 line plotter at 10 centimeters per second, courtesy of Robocom Limited, London. Isn't that fantastic?
Now funny, when you just said that to me, it reminded me back to my days in high school when we had like an architecture course at school.
Yeah.
And we had a state-of-the-art plotter at that time, which is like one of these, like, looks like a rectangle, and it has like this arm on it, and on the side of it has all these little color markers on the side.
Right.
And this robotic arm goes and grabs, like, let's say red, right?
Yeah.
Grabs it and goes over and it starts, it starts drawing.
Yes.
Then it goes back, puts the red back, grabs the green, and fills it all in. And that's exactly the kind of plotter they used to make this yes thing.
Wow.
So I think back to my high school days for that, you know?
Absolutely. And the funny thing is that Trevor Rabin has a link to this as well, doesn't he? Because the computers that he used for talk, so that was revolutionary again at the time, not for artwork, but for the recording. So he recorded it directly to hard disk, which in those days was unheard of. And he had these Apple LC2s, I think they were in those days. So again, there's a bit of a thread through there with the Apple computers doing the artwork for 90125 and then being the computers that Trevor actually used to produce the album talk later on in 1994, that was. So gosh, that was 11 years afterwards. Yeah, really bizarre. So I think we ought to take a step back, though, because you may be listening to this and wondering, what are they on about, 90124? What on earth are they talking about? So what this was, released in 2003, which is interestingly, when they started doing the CDs of other Yes albums, 2003 was the major release of quite a few different Yes albums on CD. And Trevor Rabin was convinced by the record company to do this thing called 90124. And on it are the demos of several songs which turned up on 90125, which is why he called it 90124, and several which turned up on other albums as well. So just reading the track list here, we've got the demo of Hold On and Changes, a song called Moving In that we'll come back to in a minute, which also turned up on 90125 in a different format. Would You Feel My Love, which is not a terribly good song, I don't think, personally. Where Will You Be? Also the demo for that, which he recorded in 1991, and then it turned up on Talk in 1994. Owner of a Lonely Heart demo, and there's two parts to that that we'll come back to. Walls, which also turned up on Talk, and that's got some backing vocals by Roger Hodgson, fascinatingly. Promenade, which is a kind of guitar orchestra version of the Mussorgsky pictures at a museum, pictures at an exhibition song. So he just created that with guitars only, a bit like Brian May used to do with his orchestras of guitars. Love Will Find a Way, the demo of that. Miracle of Life demo and Cinema demo. Again, Cinema turned up on 90125 in a different format as well. So I said that yes, if you read the sleeve notes to this, Trevor had to be convinced that this was going to be worth putting out. And in a way, I'm not surprised. I mean, I think he always thought of it as a bit of a joke, really. And the idea was to produce an actual release, an actual Trevor Rabin release of 90124 as a CD, completely composed of these demo versions. Now, you've got a great knowledge of all sorts of rock and pop history, Mark. There must be other examples of people putting out demos as actual albums.
Oh, Man, let me tell you, is there ever? I mean, there's a whole market of this stuff out there. Like, let's put it this way, and I can already see our friend, Jeremy North?
Yes.
I can already see his rolling his eyes, Jeremy, and I apologize in advance, that there's a whole series of Kiss albums out that have vinyl releases that are, and you would be surprised, like these are like demos of songs that they worked on in between records, and some of them are like four tracks, some of them are, and Gene Simmons is notorious for just doing like ridiculous, like, you know, you're like your little ghetto blaster radio that you have in the day. He would like put a cassette in, hit record and play like something, and it sounds like, it sounds ridiculous, like how bad it is. And they put this stuff to vinyl and they release it, and people are paying like $60 for vinyl and this of this terrible sounding thing. And there's, Kevin, I'm telling you, no lie, there's got to be at least 35 different albums with these like different demos that are out there. Okay.
Goodness me.
And there's, and Rush has a whole bunch online. You can see on YouTube, like, you know, the making of Power Windows. And those ones are kind of better because they usually, you know, would go off somewhere to like a, you know, up north here in Ontario and find a cottage and get like a little 8-track recorder. So the quality would be a bit better, but it would still be like drum machine and stuff like that. But there's lots of bands that do these sort of like writing sessions and commit them to some sort of, you know, recording, you know, device, whether it's a 2-track recorder or an 8-track. But, you know, they usually, though, suspect to just use this internally. They don't usually expect to have a record company saying, hey, we really must release those demos that you did last year, you know?
Yes, that's right. Which is why this selection here on 90124 is in some ways a lot better than that. Some of them are pretty basic recordings, but others are actually done in a proper studio and sound fantastic. And one or two of them, particularly the later ones, as you probably won't be surprised to hear, Love Will Find a Way, Where Will You Be, on those sorts of ones that turned up on later albums, actually sound rather good. And we can tell that Trevor Rabin was a great producer even at this stage when he did those. Although some others are just him noodling around on guitar and just sort of vocalizing the tune, just sort of humming the tune or whatever, as real proper demos. So it is surprising that this ever saw the light of day as an official CD release. And as I say, it's quite difficult to get hold of these now, and some of them are quite expensive. And yes, I was very surprised when I looked into it just today, in fact, that it did have a very recent vinyl release.
Unbelievable.
It really is quite surprising. 90124 on vinyl. I don't have that, I hasten to add. Anyway, let's talk about the songs themselves. And the two fascinating ones when you listen to them together are Hold On and Moving In. And this is one of those songs which he eventually took for the Yes version. He eventually took part of Hold On, that he's recorded the demo of here, and part of Moving In, and spliced them together into the one song that we know as Hold On. And yeah, quite a number of these songs on this album I found were fairly 80s sort of spangly guitars and a bit of sort of hair metal 80s and really more extreme versions of the sorts of songs that you would hear on Trevor Rabin solo albums of that era, although he didn't do very much, as we know. But certainly that they were changed quite dramatically when they got as far as 90125 and Trevor Horn working on them and John Anderson adding vocals and so on. Is that your experience of this album as well?
Yes, I mean, let's put it this way. Now I can understand, after hearing this, why Trevor was like, you can't be serious about releasing this. because when you listen to some of this stuff, like those songs, like the Moving In, you know, it has like if I'm remembering correctly, it has sort of like the verse parts there, but different vocal melodies and stuff like that. And the lyrics are not the same at all, I don't think, on there. But these recordings, Kevin, like, the synthesized bass that's in there, like boom, 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 like all these like really odd keyboard sounds. And you know, the funny thing is, it takes me, when I was listening to this, it took me back to our interview that we did with Trevor.
Yeah.
And when we asked him the question about, you know, if he was, you know, ever thinking about or ever thought about, you know, joining Yes or being excited about joining Yes. And he was like, no, I never thought about it in a minute. This totally proves it, because this sounds nothing like Yes.
No.
This sounds nothing even progressive. It sounds so like like popish. There's like lots of like dance keyboard elements in there. He was looking for a commercial hit record, I'm thinking at this point. He was, because a lot of it is so upbeat, so dancey. Like I can't help but those synthesized bass, like especially in, I know we'll get to this as well, Owner of a Lonely Heart, but I just have to make reference to this. The verse part in there, which is that it's so like hand claps and these bad keyboard synths. That's why I remember in the documentary, Trevor Horn saying that when he heard that he thought the verse was shocking. So I'm pretty sure that's the thing that he heard that was referring to that. But hold on, getting back to that. It's interesting because, like you said, Moving In has the verse parts, and the Hold On actual demo has more of the chorus section there, but with like a slightly different arrangement of the chorus itself.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But it's fascinating hearing those, and he mentions that in the sleeve notes specifically. That's why he put Moving In and Hold On, both demos, in there, because it really is a splice version of the two songs. So it's the chorus from one and it's the verses from the other, which is surprising that it works really rather well. And the things that were missed out were, yes, some of those 80s stadium rock versions. And I wrote a little note to myself saying that it has, Hold On has none of the sort of finesse and polish of the Yes version. And that's fair enough, because this is a demo version. But certainly, when Cinema, the band, started to work together, they clearly added some touches which brought this song into the Yes canon. And certainly when Anderson arrived as well, Anderson's sharing of the lead vocal duties, I think, added a great deal. And I think when we talked to John Dee and Dave Watkinson, who actually went to the Cinema rehearsal, go back and listen to that episode because it's fantastic, they did mention that they thought that John added a number of aspects to these songs, including the lyrics, different lyrics, very different lyrics, and a lot of those touches that you would expect. However, Trevor Rabin does say in the three notes to this as well, and he has said elsewhere, that really the songs were pretty much finished before John arrived. So I suppose in a way you could say that what John did manage to add really did elevate it, and it really did make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, when they got together, the thing that seems apparent to me is when you listen to these demos, they're not anything that I think that would be justified to say is like a Yes album worthy material here. But when they got Trevor Rabin in and Trevor Horn together, I think that's where it started to smoothen out, because when they were just a four piece, right, under Cinema, I think that he already started saying, well, you know what, let's take this, let's bring the tempo down, let's not make it so robotic sounding. Alan added that sort of, you know, great drum fill at the beginning of Hold On. They came in, right? So he added these things. And I think a lot of that has to be attributed to Trevor Horn. I think that he smoothened out the parts. He made the melodies better. I mean, nowhere in Hold On in his demos did you have that talk box part, that wow. That whole thing was not present in any of his demos.
No.
But that must have came from Trevor, because that's, you know, technology, again, vocoders and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And definitely the thing that I find apparent is that when John Anderson then got involved, he definitely, I think, improved the lyrics, because some of Trevor Rabin's lyrics are really, really tacky. Like, they're not too good. I mean, okay. I've always said that John Anderson's lyrics were a little kumbaya sounding sometimes, but but in this situation, I think he definitely added to what was there and made it for a much more stronger song overall.
So fascinating to hear how it developed. Now, going on to Changes, we've got what I thought was a pretty sort of rasping synth at the beginning, and guitar and vocals were taken really quite wholesale into the Yes version. And I thought the drum pattern as well, it seems to be quite similar to what White ended up adding as well, which I thought was interesting, because all these instruments on these songs were recorded by Trevor himself. He certainly is a very talented individual. This time, though, the chorus was not kept at all from this version of Changes. They're completely different words, much more, again, an 80s sort of hit, as you've just been as just you've just been saying. But the verse, pretty much identical, including the lyrics, actually, for Changes. And the same vocal treatment, I thought, and lots of reverb for Trevor, which reminded me very much of the 90125 approach as well. The guitar solo, I thought, not as good as the Yes one. But things like some of the backing singer exclamations of Changes, you know, those sorts of things, do make it onto the Yes version. It's quite a short demo, this one of Changes, but I was quite pleased that the chorus wasn't kept from this version.
Yeah, and it's interesting. This is one of those songs where you immediately listen to it and go, okay, now I'm hearing something familiar and something that did appear on the album, which is the vocal part and the verses and stuff like that. But of course, you've got to tip your hat now to Alan, because Alan definitely had a big contribution in this, in the part that everybody seems to signify with this song, which is the dun 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 at the beginning, which is not here on his demos, but Alan brings in later and they tag at the top of the song. And that, again, I can guarantee you, was one of these situations where Alan's in the studio playing on the piano, fiddling around, do 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 do, and then Trevor goes, "Just a minute there, you know, Trevor Horn, what are you playing there? Play that again. Roll the tape, and play that again, Alan." And you know, and he plays it, and then all of a sudden, you know, they fly it in, they tag it at the top, and then everyone's looking around saying, "Wow, this is fantastic!" You know, I can totally see that happening where they, you know, discover a part, they bring it in, they add it to the top of the song, and all of a sudden, you have a song that went from, you know, an okay song, pretty simple, but to something that's much more grandiose now with that kind of a whole beginning tag to it. Because then that verse part now can stay nice and mellow and in that tempo range, because they had such an upbeat beginning at the top of the song. But, you know, it is interesting, like you said, how they added a little backing vocal parts in there that were already there and stuff like that. And, you know, you can't help but listening to this version, you miss John Anderson with that whole one word from you, word from me. Like, you're waiting for that, you know?
Yes. And that's, as we were just saying, that's got to be a John Anderson addition, I think, because it's very much his style. And I think it's, you know, it's part of the whole point of 90125 is that it's taken beyond this basic, in some ways basic, material and taken into a different level. Yeah, and I agree entirely with what you're saying about that. I mean, that's one of my favorite things. And did I not choose? Yes, I did. Changes as one of my favorite from 90125.
Yes,
last week, and that's because very much of that rhythmical complexity at the beginning there, which I love. Okay, then Owner of a Lonely Heart. In some ways, the most important aspect of 90125 from the point of view of it being a hit single and therefore catapulting Yes back into the public eye. So fascinating. So we've got two parts, as I said earlier, two parts to this demo on 90124. First of all, an acoustic guitar and Trevor just humming or vocalizing the melody over the top. But in fact, a lot of the melody is there. Almost all of the melody is there. The chorus has lyrics. He does actually, you know, play around with the words Owner of a Lonely Heart and Owner of a Broken Heart and so on. Some of the singing is slightly out of time, which, again, it's not surprising because it's a demo. And then after we have that, so that's kind of the genesis of how he was putting the thing together, then it goes into a full sort of demo version with a totally different opening, which again was missed out from Yes's version. It's recognisable, but the lyrics and melody were totally different. And the chorus, though, they're almost exactly, but again, a lot more of that 80s sort of pop rock guitar song going on. And also the backing singing, which was later added by John, I think, great. There's a bridge section, which is not retained. There's cowbell. There's even cowbell in there, and a couple of synth solos, one of them quite Moog, and one of them quite Hammond. So it's a bit of a different beast, this.
Yeah, and I find it interesting because it reminds me of some of even, like, you know, demos that I've done in the past too. Like the orc, you know, he starts up with the dan 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 on the acoustic guitar, and he has like one line. It's like, "Move yourself," and then all of a sudden, da 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 la 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 la, like no lyrics. It's just him nonsensical, you know, wording in there just to make a melody, which is always interesting to hear that, because you can tell what he keeps and what he decides to not keep, you know, or what he had early on. So obviously he had Move Yourself from the very beginning of the song, pretty much.
Yes.
But, you know, it's from there, it developed onward. The actual other demo that he does on there, I was referencing earlier, that had that, you know, insanely, you know, mix between 80s and 80s dance the verse there, that dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's so upbeat, and the drum machine part is so, you know, wow. Like, it's something that you would hear on disco floor or something, you know, at that time. But, you know, it's just for ideas that you have to remember when you hear these things, right? And again, a lot more of it is pieced together. A lot more of it has developed by that point. And the funny thing is, if my memory serves me correctly, there is yet another demo version of this song that has that whole what Trevor Horn calls the heavy metal tag part at the beginning, which has the actual guitar in there at the beginning. Because I remember him in the documentary saying that he actually heard that demo cassette of that on there, and he stopped him immediately. He said, "Hey, what is that?" And Trevor's like, "Nah, that's just a demo for somebody else, you know." And so I don't know if that guitar riff was part of something else before it became Owner of a Lonely Heart, but it couldn't be, because it's the same part, you know, as he had on the acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how this developed. There's so many different versions of these songs out there floating around, and who knows how many versions of Owner of a Lonely Heart were made demo-wise before the final version was actually done.
Yeah, that's right. I quite liked the Hammond-ish solo, and I thought, and it did remind me of a sort of Tony Kaye approach to soloing, which is quite strange in that he was in the band, certainly in cinema, and then left for a bit and then came back, and it's always debatable how many of the keyboards on 90125 were actually done by Tony, and how much is left from what Trevor Rabin did, and even Trevor Horn himself. Yeah. So yes, that's fascinating to hear two different versions of Owner, and as you say, other ones floating around as well. So the final song demo version on here is Cinema. And I looked Cinema up on the amazing Forgotten Yesterdays website, and it turns out that they've played it between Yes and ARW. Cinema has been played live 336 times, if you can believe it, by the band. 84 to 85, once in, I think it was in 94, 99 to 2000 it was played in, 2004, and then 2016 to 18 by ARW. And, you know, it's one of my favourite live pieces. But again, very different in some ways. So the song Don't Give In is actually embedded into this version of Cinema, whereas when it was played, and as it appears on 90125, it's just the instrumental bit. So we've got this song Don't Give In, and some things are the same, a very similar electric solo, I thought, and the same guitar riff opening it, but there's even a sort of semi-proggy quiet section before another crazy fast guitar solo to end. And it always puzzled me. I mean, I'm very, very keen on Cinema, very, very much. And I love the way it was done live. But it always slightly puzzled me how it ended up on 90125 in the version that it's in.
Yeah, I mean the funny thing is, it's the only song on the album that was recorded completely live.
Yes.
Off the floor. And because of that, it has such a different overall sound of the band. I mean, if you listen to the rest of the record... it's very, the miking of everything is very close. Everything is very up front in your face. Mm. Whereas on the recording of Cinema, there's a lot of room sound in there. Like, it sounds like you're sitting in the middle of the band, and they're all around you, and they're just playing the song. You know, like Trevor's guitar is not nearly as in front in the mix as it would be in other songs. It almost sounds like they used more room mics than they use what's called close miking, where they use the ones that are right up against the speakers, right? Very much more ambient, much more air to it. And it's funny, they recorded at Air Studios, of all places, right?
Yeah.
So, but I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, they even say that on there, that it was probably taken from the actual Cinema recording sessions. Yes. This is, I don't think this is part of the Yes, like proper with John Anderson time. No. This is probably before that, right?
Yeah.
So it definitely has a different sound to it, which makes me believe that if they were to have stayed that way, maybe the whole album would have had this type of sound to it, but just with vocals with Trevor and Chris.
Yeah, fascinating. And of course, it went on to win a Grammy, didn't it?
Yeah, and rightly so. I mean, it's such a great song. I mean, that whole guitar bit and the interplay between the drums and the bass guitar, I mean, that whole bass thing at the beginning is so well done. That whole how it just fades in. It's just, what a great sound Chris came up with on the bass for that. You know, and it's not overly complicated, but it has such a vibe to it, that whole bass guitar. And it, just thinking about that, when you think back to the original demos of this song, it almost sounds like a completely different thing. It's not even anywhere near the same thing. You know, there are just sections here and there of the song. I mean, there were lyrics on the original version, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, what I was always curious about, and I wish I would have known about this earlier, I would have probably asked Trevor about that, is what made the decision of going from a vocal song to just a pure instrumental.
Yeah, and quite a short instrumental at that. Yeah. I mean, I can see why they didn't leave the vocal part in, the don't give in part of it, because it's not quite in the same quality league, I don't think, as the instrumental that they came up with in the end. And of course, one of the reasons that works so well on 90125 is because they spent such a long time rehearsing and getting used to each other and developing things. And that's why it's such a good idea to record it live and put it on there, because I think it's a wonderful, as you've just said, a wonderful piece of music. And I'm very glad that we have got it on there.
Yeah.
But just before we go away from this, just to mention the other ones there. Now, some of these, Where Will You Be, Walls, Love Will Find a Way, Miracle of Life. Some of these demo versions, I would, if you told me, I would believe you that some of this made it onto the real records. It's really quite polished, some of this.
Yeah, and I definitely think that, and this is an interesting point to bring up, because you listen to the 90125 stuff, you can definitely tell he had no interest in progressive music at that time. He was writing more for his own kind of solo recording. He wanted to make a solo record, blah, 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 blah. And now you hear songs that they're working on. He's been in Yes already for a while now. He knows kind of how this thing works. He's been around the world playing Yes songs, like, you know, Starship Trooper and, Seen Old Good People and other classics. And he kind of has a feel for it now. And it shows up, especially in songs like Miracle of Life, for example. What a progressive masterpiece that is, even in its earliest demo form. And we have the beauty of having a lot more Trevor vocal in there, right?
Yes.
So what a great song that is. And one of my favorite songs of all time has got to be Walls. And the version that they did with Roger Hodgkins there is, it's almost the same thing. It's just, just take Roger out and put John in, and it's pretty much the exact same song.
Yes, 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 it is. And that goes very well. And yes, I'm glad you mentioned Trevor's vocals on here. And as we've just heard on his Rio album, his vocals are back to almost their best, or perhaps even their best now. But some of the vocals on these, particularly these songs, Walls and Love Will Find a Way, etc., really high quality lead vocal singing. And that was one of the question marks, wasn't it? Who were they going to get into cinema to do the lead vocals? But some of the lead vocals here, absolutely great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, again, it all goes down to showing what happens when you put somebody in like Trevor into a band, let them be in there for a year, get to know how this whole system operates and how they work together. And he ends up developing into a credible progressive rock songwriter then. I mean, all those songs that he did afterwards are just fantastic. I mean, Miracle of Life is great. Those other songs you mentioned as well. I mean, Love Will Find a Way is one of my favorite songs from Big Generator. So obviously already there, you know, he was comfortable now with the idea of being in Yes now, and it shows in the songwriting.
Yes, isn't that fascinating? When we spoke to him, he was He certainly wouldn't have chosen to go and join Yes, but in fact got into it. And as we have discussed many times, we think that Talk is a real masterwork.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely brilliant. Okay, well, just looking back at this then, 90124, what do you think, Mark? Worth fans hearing 90124?
Well, let's put it this way. What kind of a fan are you? are you a fan that likes investigating origins of things? Are you one of those people who likes to discover the beginnings of things? This is for you. Okay, because then you can see where these ideas came from and amaze yourself at how some of these songs developed from something that it totally was nothing like in its final form.
Following
its development. But if you're one of these people that are just, you know, I'm a Yes fan and I just like listening to my studio records and I'm happy with that, then this might be something that you might, you know, not enjoy as much.
Hmm.
You know, but we like to think of ourselves, the five percentile that we are. We like to think of ourselves as, you know, very inquisitive and very, you know, deep thinkers. So I would say that most Yes fans, I think, would be probably interested in getting this, even on vinyl.
Even on vinyl? Gosh, I bet it's really expensive as well on vinyl. But
I'm going to find out.
And it must be quite short on vinyl. But anyway, but get it on vinyl if you would like to. Certainly an amazing piece of Yes history. Yep. So don't believe us, though. I'll put links to the various videos around there. There isn't a single video of the whole of the 90124 album, but you can piece it together yourself from the videos that are out there, or if you can't get hold of a copy yourself. So, as I say, don't take our word for it. Have a listen to that and leave your comments on the show notes for this week. We'd love to hear what you think of 90124, Trevor Rabin's set of Yes and some other things, demos. Let us know what you think. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.